It's Tuesday, December 22nd. Do you feel relieved? We start here. America gets its first look at an economic relief bill, and not everyone's impressed.
Reminds me of Oliver Twist, you know, here's a bowl of porridge.
Workers displaced by a pandemic ask, was this meant to save struggling families or just juice the economy? The World Health Organization says, yes, there is a more contagious form of COVID-19.
It probably has moved around many parts of Europe and likely even North America as well.
Is it coming to the U.S. or has it gotten here already?
Constantine.
And you ever make a prank call to the guy who tried to kill you?
Navalny persuades him, essentially sort of bullies him.
How a Russian exile managed to expose the Putin regime with the oldest trick in the phone book. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey. It's easy to tell people to go into lockdown, to tell them to stay home from work, stay away from each other. You can say that, but it's completely unrealistic if there's no way for them to survive, to provide for themselves and their families. That has been the overwhelming message from public health experts since we started begging people to socially distance. Step one, you lock people down. Step two, prop people up. Step three, get everyone vaccinated. Without the relief, you can't really do the lockdown, right? Which is why for the better part of a year, we've just been waiting for that third step, for the vaccine.
More help is on the way.
Well, this weekend, congressional leaders reached a deal on financial relief. We knew that, but we didn't have the bill itself until yesterday.
Congress tonight now racing to vote on a new $900 billion stimulus relief package, the first one since March.
In fact, after months of waiting, we even had to wait for the printouts to arrive. This bill is more than 5,000 pages. So at long last, here's what's in it. First, direct payments to Americans.
The bill includes a one-time payment of $600 for individuals making up to $75,000 a year. A family of four stands to receive $2,400.
Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin says if the IRS has your bank account info, like direct deposit, that money could come to you as soon as next week. That's a one-time payment. The thing that can actually keep your head above water are recurring payments, as in unemployment insurance.
This bill that we're voting on has $300 per week of enhanced UI.
Those are the biggest takeaways from this bill, but that is not nearly where it ends. Small businesses will get money in the way of those PPP loans. Schools will get money after months of changing everything about how they operate. $10 billion is going to the decimated child care industry. $15 billion for airlines to pay their workers. $1 billion for Amtrak. But there are also things that just don't seem as clearly COVID-related. Funding for new Smithsonian museums in Washington, replacing broadband cables that were manufactured overseas for security reasons. Altogether, this adds up to nearly $1 trillion, one of the biggest price tags in congressional history. And yet, after months of waiting, could it still be too little, too late? Let's talk to somebody who's been dealing with this firsthand. Lisa Mistretta joins us from Walden, New York this morning. And Lisa, you're a certified nursing assistant by trade, right? You work in hospice care, and yet you haven't really been able to work this year, right? Why is that?
I have high-risk lung conditions that I can't work. My client passed away on March 13th from COVID. And since then, I haven't been able to work. My doctor pulled me out of work.
Oh, like in the beginning of this, March 13th.
Yeah, Friday the 13th.
Really?
Yeah. My doctor basically said to me that I'll be 6 feet under if I catch COVID. When she told me I couldn't work, I tried applying right away for unemployment. It took a couple of weeks. I had to wait.
Layoffs are surging, and the phone lines and websites to apply for unemployment insurance are jammed.
You will get the check. I know you want it today, but you will get it.
We were bringing in no money. We had to wait for those unemployment checks to start coming into us. You know, I had to tell my landlord I don't have the money for rent right now, you know, until, you know, I get my unemployment check or the first stimulus check came to us.
The president signing that massive relief bill into law, the $2.2 trillion bill, the biggest ever.
And this will deliver urgently needed relief to our nation's families, workers, and businesses.
I was able to pay my bills, support my girls, you know, pay our rent, our utilities, your insurance. You know, up until it ended in July. You know, so I always kept on top of my rent. I was not one not to pay my landlord or my bills.
Right. Okay. So you had that first stimulus there, which was super quick and unanimous from Congress. Now you had this bill that was voted through last night. How much does this one affect you then?
This new bill is really not going to help much. For the past 6 months, without any help that we've had, without that, you know, pandemic unemployment compensation, I've been trying to survive on $276 a week, which is 17% of my base salary that I was making before I became unemployed. You know, that's $1,100 a month. My rent is $1,300 just for my rent alone. You know, it's not counting heat in the wintertime, your food, your insurance, your utilities, your internet for schooling. It's not acceptable, really. I don't know how we're going to survive on this amount.
So there's the $600, like that to you, I guess, just feels like a drop in the bucket, I assume.
Yeah, that's like a slap in the face. It's just...
Wow.
Reminds me of Oliver Twist, you know, here's a bowl of porridge, to put it bluntly. Please, sir, can I have some more? But it's not even funny to laugh about, you know.
In addition to the $600, there's the unemployment benefits, right? What's that do for you?
That $300 extra, that brings me a $576. I was making $1,200 a week when I was working.
Right.
So, and that's $576 a week pre-tax. That's before taxes. So it's necessary that I say that too. So how do you even have your taxes withheld from that money if you need it to survive right now?
Right.
You know, so come tax time, I'm going to have a big tax bill.
Oh, I didn't even think about that. How all of a sudden now you're like planning on, I hope I have some extra in the bank.
Yeah. It's going to be fun paying those taxes back.
Well, and it's fascinating to me, Lisa, because I would think we want you in healthcare, right? Like as Americans, we don't want people like you taking a part-time job in telemarketing or something so you can pay back your taxes from your unemployment check. Like next year, sorry to say, like we're literally probably going to need more hospice nurses, right?
Oh. Yeah, and that really frustrates me beyond belief, too, because right now I want to get a vaccine. Mm. You know, I've been trying to get a vaccine so I can go back to work safely. But because I'm unemployed and I'm not working right now, I don't qualify to get a vaccine.
Oh.
So I'm not going to be able to get one, according to CDC, until phase 1C, when it's for the 60 to 74-year-olds and that for those of us that are at high risk.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm not working, I can't get a vaccine. And I can't get it go to work if I'm not vaccinated because it's not safe for me. So it's a catch-22.
Let's turn back to Capitol Hill, where those negotiations are coming at a crucial time for struggling Americans. 885,000 people filed unemployment claims in the U.S. last week. That's up 23,000 from the week before. So
we've heard lots of people complain. $600 a week. Come on. Or $300 extra unemployment. Like, come on, that's just not enough. We have heard economists say, well, these individual people, they might be upset. But as far as the economy, this is at least the bare minimum for what the economy, for what the, you know, the grocery stores or the gift stores that are selling for Christmas, this is what they need to get going so at least people don't lose more jobs. What's your reaction when you hear someone like that?
That $600 doesn't even cover half of my rent. So... Do you think I'm going to go out to the gift store next week and go buy gifts with it? Or do you think I'm going to pay my landlord to keep a roof over my head? You know, it's not right. Stimulating the economy. You know, it's just propping up the Dow Jones again. We're not the market. We're not the Dow Jones. You know, they got to stop basing the economy off of that.
What do you tell you? You said you have two daughters?
Yeah, two daughters.
What do you tell your daughters about this experience and where you're going to be come Christmas time, come New Year's and going into next year?
Well, I told them that, you know, well, at least we're lucky to have a, you know, roof still over our head, you know, at this present time, you know, and we'll celebrate Christmas after. We'll just have to delay it a little bit.
What do you mean after?
You know, after we get back on our feet. I said, at least we have a roof and you have some food. So
yeah, that's gotta be tough for them to hear, but I'm sure they're glad that you're like doing your best. And I was gonna say, and come vaccine hopefully is sort of the game changer for you as well.
I know. I really want one. Maybe Santa bring me one for Christmas.
Yeah, that's absolutely the way to think of it. Well, hopefully you do get kind of a Christmas 2.0 at some point soon. You deserve it. Lisa Mistretta from upstate New York, thank you and good luck.
You're welcome. Take care.
Next up on Start Here, it's beginning to look a lot like Wuhan. Do American scientists think we should ban holiday travel from London after the break? This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Have you ever wondered what you would do with an extra hour in your day? I think about this all the time. I'm like, I would be so productive. I'd exercise more, or I'd read a book, or I'd take a nap, like restore myself. We often find ourselves yearning for these extra hours, but the real question is, what would you do if you were making yourself a priority? Well, how about therapy? It can help you discover what's important so you can make the most of your time. If you've ever benefited from therapy, you know how transformative it can be. It's not just for those who have experienced major trauma. Therapy empowers you to learn positive coping skills, set boundaries, and become the best version of yourself. If you're considering starting therapy, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and tailored to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire. You'll be matched with a licensed therapist. And here's the beauty of it. You can switch therapists if you're not finding the right fit. No additional charge. Take the first step. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/start here today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/start here. With daylight saving time upon us, we're looking forward to more daylight and longer days from March through November. And while setting our clocks forward gives us the illusion of more time, it doesn't necessarily help businesses find qualified candidates any sooner. Fear not, there is a solution. ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter is your 24/7 hiring partner working tirelessly to connect you with the right candidate. Once you post your job on ZipRecruiter, it gets distributed to over 100 job sites, ensuring you reach a diverse pool of qualified individuals. Their smart technology scans thousands of resumes, matching you with people whose skills perfectly align with your job requirements. Spring forward with a new hiring partner, ZipRecruiter, and find top talent sooner. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address to try ZipRecruiter for free, ZipRecruiter.com/start here. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/start here. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
We looked at where the new variant was, where it was spreading, and enacted to restrict it there.
Yesterday, we told you about this new variant, this new mutation of COVID-19, a version of the virus so concerning to European officials that they basically told everyone in their countries, hey, no one goes in or out of the United Kingdom starting right now.
We learned this lesson the hard way, and we're not going to go through it again.
New York has a special history with COVID in Europe. Remember, it was travelers coming from Italy, not China, who likely created this initial explosion of cases here. Governor Andrew Cuomo can't change immigration laws on his own, but he could lean on airlines to do COVID-19 testing of every passenger flying from London to New York. Yesterday, in many airlines, he succeeded.
British Airways, Delta, and Virgin Atlantic just announcing plans to test all passengers heading to America.
But remember, a lot of the details you've heard about this different form of COVID, they're coming from political people, not science people. We've got more information, though, this morning. Dr. John Brownstein is an epidemiologist at Boston Children's Hospital and Harvard Medical School. He's also an ABC News contributor. Dr. Brownstein, what do we know at this point about the dangers of this?
Yeah, the reality is we're still accumulating more data to fully understand the impact of this new variant. I think there's some reason to be concerned, but there's definitely a lot of confusion out there and some mixed messaging.
The authorities say they haven't found the strain here yet. They are science-based. Until they find the strain, they will say there is no strain.
I think the reality is that we are concerned because this is a version of the virus that is rapidly replacing other versions, and likely part of the reason we saw this steep increase in cases in some regions of England is because of this new variant. It has a number of mutations, actually 17 to be exact. And some of them are likely important because they're found related to the spike protein that we know is important in terms of the virus entry into cells. And this mutation, some of the mutations may be related to increasing the ability of this virus to infect cells.
What has people alarmed is how infectious this version may be. Early estimates indicate that it could be as much as 70% more contagious. The WHO also seeing an increase in the infection rate.
The data points to the fact that it's more transmissible because of this increase in sort of the numbers of cases that a single infected person will create. The exact number, I think, has some high variation. And so we have to, you know, to caution people not to overinterpret the data. But I think, you know, the World Health Organization is putting out, you know, reasonable information that there is an increase in transmissibility. But that doesn't necessarily mean that it creates more severe cases of COVID or higher mortality rates. And of course, that's what we'll be especially concerned about as we're trying to protect our health systems from overcrowding.
Is it worth then limiting travel from the UK? Like, I remember the Trump administration kind of sat on limiting European Union travel for like days and days back in the spring. Is this sort of a moment worth saying, hey, London, no, not right now?
I think the reality is we've now identified that this variant has been circulating for weeks, if not months. It probably has moved around many parts of Europe and likely even North America as well. I think sort of this a major impact of a travel ban, you know, is severe, and the economic impacts are real. So I think, you know, we have other tools in our toolbox.
It's the same rules with this virus, any variant of this virus, and we must focus on what we can do and what we do know rather than what we don't know.
We have testing. We have the ability to quarantine. Mm. I mean, those are things that are effective measures to reduce transmission. And I think likely we should be trying some of these more targeted approaches. I mean, we have not implemented true sort of enforced quarantine like other countries when you arrive here or forced testing.
And for us to once again be incompetent as a federal government and take no action is just not a viable option for us in New York.
We haven't implemented those intervention. So I think, you know, it's a bit of a major leap to then get into travel bans when we haven't even done some basic interventions.
President-elect Joe Biden rolling up his sleeve, getting Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine.
I'm doing this to demonstrate that people should be prepared when it's available to take the vaccine. There's nothing to worry about.
And meanwhile, one of the biggest healthcare policy pushes on these shores is just to get Americans taking this vaccine. You had President-elect Biden taking the Pfizer vaccine on live TV yesterday. The Moderna vaccine has now started getting injected into Americans' arms, but still big questions on how quickly our healthcare system is capable of getting all these shots administered. Dr. John Brownstein, thank you.
Thank you.
The American government is still wrapping its head around this massive hack that officials are convinced originated from Russia. Now, the Russians have denied they had anything to do with it. However, they're also denying having anything to do with this.
Tonight, one of Vladimir Putin's fiercest rivals is now fighting for his life, hospitalized on a ventilator, falling ill on a flight. Was he poisoned?
I said to the flight attendant, I was poisoned. And I'm going to die.
A fellow passenger recording the sound of moaning. Navalny was rushed to the hospital.
Germany confirmed that he had been poisoned by the military-grade nerve agent Novichok.
Speaking to 60 Minutes, Russia's leading activist was crystal clear.
You think that Mr. Putin's responsible?
I don't think, I'm sure, that he's responsible.
Well, yesterday we heard an audio recording that seemed to show a Russian security agent admitting he was on the team that poisoned Navalny. What he didn't appear to understand here was he was talking to Navalny himself. ABC's Patrick Reval covers the Kremlin. Patrick, this is wild. Like, it sounds like a prank call on a radio show, except you're talking to the guy who allegedly tried to assassinate you.
Hey, Brad. Yeah, I mean, it is astonishing, really. Basically, Navalny posted an almost hour-long recording of this phone call.
Konstantin.
Hello, Konstantin Borisovich.
And essentially what it was that he rang up one of the men who is supposed to be an FSB agent and part of the team that allegedly poisoned Navalny back in August.
Здравствуйте. Меня зовут Устинов Максим Сергеевич. Я помощник Николая Платоновича Патрушева. Мне ваш телефон дал Владимир Михайлович Богданов.
So Navalny calls up this guy called Konstantin Kudryavtsev and says essentially that I'm a senior aide to a top Russian security official. Navalny basically says, I'm doing a sort of after-action report on why you failed to kill Alexei Navalny. So this guy, and it's clearly early in the morning, and the guy, he answers firstly with his name Artyom. He thinks he knows who's calling. And Navalny says, no, no, it's, you know, essentially, I'm your boss.
Konstantin Borisovich. Вы слышали, что я вам сказал? Я по поручению Патрушева звоню.
That seems to be, at least in the way that this call plays out, that this persuades the officer to keep talking, because initially he's quite hesitant. He keeps saying, you know, maybe we should have this conversation over a secure line.
Да-да-да, ну, а посадить самолет посадили через 40 минут. В принципе, это должно было бы как бы...
And Navalny persuades him, essentially sort of bullies him. And as it goes on, he discloses more and more details about this operation and confirms more and more. And that's also one of the reasons why this phone call is so astonishing, because I think when people normally think about Russian hitmen and Russian spies, they think of it being quite glamorous. This man most certainly is not glamorous in this phone call. He has, you know,
he sounds grizzled.
That's one way of putting it, I guess. Yeah, he's not very articulate, let's put it that way. And what's crucial here is that this comes a week after this explosive investigation by the independent group Bellingcat, who obviously have a very strong reputation. But even, you know, leaving aside their reputation, one of the things that was extraordinary about this investigation was its level of detail. They essentially, last week, identified the team of assassins who they allege targeted Navalny. And this team is based in an FSB unit that they claim is part of a unit that specializes in poisoning people. Based on the evidence that they put forward, these agents, you know, have chemical weapons training. And, you know, and that's what gives this call so much credibility as well, is that, as I say, it's a very long conversation and there's nothing direct where it's like, oh, yes, you know, we took the poison here, we did this, we did that. It's like pulling teeth, frankly, because the guy doesn't want to talk on an unsecure line.
The traces of the toxic agent were not found in the water itself, suggesting rather that Navalny had been poisoned before he touched the bottle and before he got to the airport.
One of the mysteries we've been trying to work out is how Navalny was exposed to this. And this guy appears to suggest that it was through his underwear. This man, what he suggests to Navalny is that his job was to make sure there were no traces of the poison left on his clothes. And they have this long exchange about that where he, you know, says, no, well, don't worry. We washed his underwear, so the poison is gone from that. You won't be able to test it.
Все, договорились. Добро.
So this sounds stunning. It sounds scintillating. Does it change anything, though, Patrick? Like, most world governments, I imagine, are just... They were safely assuming this was a Russian operation before. They're safely assuming it's a Russian operation now. So does this have an impact besides maybe embarrassing the guy on the other end of the phone?
Absolutely. I think, as you say, you know, most European governments and the U.S. obviously have already said that they believe Russia did this and there have been sanctions imposed. There's obviously a huge benefit in providing stronger evidence for that, particularly for both Russians and for, you know, people living in Western countries. I think, you know, sadly, within Russia, I fear that because of the strength of propaganda in Russia, many people will still just hear the FSB line that this is a fake. They'll say it's impossible that someone like Bellingcat could have done such an investigation. And so therefore it can't be true. But on the other hand, I think the thing what is amazing about these recent Bellingcat investigations is they are so thorough and frankly also so embarrassing that actually it does, maybe it starts to have a slight effect, or not, probably not on the majority, but certainly on some people within Russia. It kind of also takes a huge amount of the shine off and the mystique of Russian intelligence when you see this happening.
Right. We've talked about whether these dynamics change when you don't have a President Trump and instead you got a President Biden administration. Patrick Riewel, covering the Kremlin. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Brad.
And one last thing. We told you that buried in that COVID relief bill are some new building projects.
It's gotten tremendous architectural reviews.
You might be wondering, why would President Trump sign this? Remember, he's a builder himself.
With Doral, we have a series of magnificent buildings. We call them bungalows. They each hold from 50 to 70 very luxurious rooms.
In fact, yesterday, the president issued a new executive order that says from now on, any federal building in Washington, D.C. has to be built in the classical style of ancient Greece or Rome, as in marble, columns, domes.
You need a new building. It's a bad building. It's a dangerous building. You have slabs falling off.
President Trump has long complained about certain D.C. buildings, like the big boxy FBI building, the brutalist headquarters of the Department of Education. He's not the only one either, so you might think architects would applaud this decision. Instead, many are complaining that this sends the wrong message. Some say we should be welcoming diversity in design. Others go so far to say this follows the playbook of dictators. You know, send the signal that the state knows all. It's in control.
Building built in 1899. And that was when this was a very, very powerful, rich country, when money was no object. They built the post office with big, big dollars.
There's also the issue of where you see classical architecture. Washington is one thing. It's kind of got a vibe. But this order also applies to new federal courthouses around the country. So now you could be in a city with, like, a really modern vibe or maybe low-slung brick buildings, and then all of a sudden you're passing this building with tall Ionic columns. Is that really going to make you feel like this is your government, by the people, for the people? That said, it's an executive order. This executive is only in charge for another month. But if you thought masks and kneeling have become politicized, well, the design world is now suddenly on a very shaky foundation. Makes me think of, like, all the executive orders I would issue. Like, a bowl of Reese's Pieces at every front desk. Like, that's the new decree. No black licorice anywhere in the federal government. Man, I'd be great at this. Like, I can come up with a million of these. Start here tomorrow. Hit subscribe if you haven't already. More on all these stories at abcnews.com or the ABC News app. I'm Brad Milkey. See you tomorrow.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table.
What is happening here?
It's just beautiful chaos.
Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view.
To be honest, I was thinking about asking him for a foot massage, and then I just froze.
This is the best gig on TV.
And you know, anything can happen.
That is what we do here.
I'm not going to lie, the chair's a little small for my behind.
The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.